Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin and Paul Tulin.
Welcome, welcome to Education Currents.
Today we're going to be discussing the nine events of a class or of a classroom,
yes.
A learning period, we should
yes.
say.
This is a textbook. What we're taught in college, the nine events of instruction, but I want it interpreted. I think parents should know about it, what is expected, and should hold teachers accountable. And I think teachers should hold themselves accountable to the best of their ability.
Right. And it should be pointed out that, like with everything, that you don't always do all nine events every single time, depending
right.
on the class and depending on the situation. But some of them are musts that
yes.
you have to do each time.
So the first event is event one, gaining attention.
In order to gain attention from your classroom, the teacher should have spent the first 2 weeks, I would say, and some might do it in less, training the children into the classroom ways. And one of the best ways is to have the kids help set up the rules. And there's a whole process. That's a whole other show. But if you've done that pretty well and you train the kids what to expect, then you will have a chosen and consistent. It should be a consistent way of gaining attention. I've seen kindergarten teachers use a chime. They just take in ding, ding, and when the kids hear that, they get still and quiet. One of the more unique ones was a teacher who would hold two fingers up, and he trained his students so that when one saw that, then they would do it. And then, of course, the kids around him would see that, and then they would do it, and it would spread like a fractal, like a fractal geometry and spread through the classroom
yes.
until it was all quiet. The general idea is, though, that you find a way. You stay consistent with it, and you train your class within the first 2 weeks of your expectations when that signal is given. Turning the light on and off, I used that a lot because we were in a room where there was a windows on one side, so it put the room quite dark, and it got everybody's attention quickly. They knew when the light went mm-hmm. off and then back on that it was time to pay attention.
Now, event two is informing the learner of the objective. And here again is a good example. You might have the same learning objective the whole week. So you could
right.
post it somewhere. Or how would that, if a parent's walking into a classroom, should they be seeing?
Yes, they should see that objective written up on the board. Whether it's a chalkboard or a whiteboard, it should be written prominently, should be written in kid language so that the kids can understand what it says. If it's being introduced, it should be discussed with the kids, the expectation of what, by the end of this class, what I want you to learn. This is what we're all trying to learn. And it should be reinforced, especially with older students, it should be reinforced with some type of a chart that the kids can use that gives them ahead of time how they're going to be graded. So,
some type of rubric.
Yeah, they call it a rubric. And it really is, if they're used right, it's one of the most powerful tools in teaching. But that is also a way to reinforce your objective. Because not only are you giving the kids the objective, but you're saying, this is the objective, this is what I'm expecting from you, and this is what you can do. Here are the exact steps you can do to earn a perfect grade. The kids ahead of time will know what they have to do to accomplish what grade they want to get.
You know, there are students who, they don't care. They just love to learn. Put something in front of me and I'll do it kind of thing. But there's other students who really respond to knowing their learning objectives.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you mean I'm learning how to use the multiplicative inverse to solve algebraic equations. And that thing that we used to call reciprocal is now the multiplicative inverse. And oh, you know, and they begin to attach language and meaning to things that often sound complicated.
Yeah, that's one of the more frustrating things that I have, but that's another show. But the fact that they change terms,
yes.
you know, through the different same thing, but then they keep changing terms when you're in the third and fourth. They should keep the same term.
Yeah,
you know, a kid can learn these and like to learn big words, and then it would be the same all the way through, and they wouldn't.
That's right. So learning objectives is a very important thing, and a lot of technology now, that is fed to parents so that the parents can see what the grades are of the students right away on whatever web-based thing, whether it's RenWeb or Blackboard or WebCert. Also has a place there for them to put, for the teacher to put the learning objectives.
Yes, all of those
very
types
helpful
of,
yeah. for the parent, because they can then reinforce and support what that child's learning at school. Okay, now we're going to go to event 3, and that's stimulating recall of prior learning.
It's important. You want to tie in, they found doing brain research that people learn by attaching meaning from the past to what they're trying to learn. It's one of the reasons humans invented metaphors and similes, because it helps. If you've never tasted this soup before, and so you say to the person, what does it taste like? And they're, you've never tasted it before, so how are they going to tell you? Well, yeah. They'll say, well, it tastes something like a stroganoff. Or they'll reach back to try to find something you've tasted before that it's like,
mm-hmm.
so that they can then go forward and you can try it. And the same with learning. We need to tie our previous knowledge. We need to tie in the knowledge that's coming. So if I were going to be teaching nouns, for instance, I've got a bunch of third graders. I'm going to teach them nouns. Then I might go back and review what they've learned about sentences and how sentences work and what's the difference between a sentence and a sentence fragment. Because that's going to naturally go into nouns, because a noun will be part of a complete sentence with a verb. And if it's just as a noun and no verb, then it mm-hmm. could be a fragment. So I'm going to take what they've previously learned and I'm going to tie it in. And a person who's looking at a class would want to see that happen. You want to see that happen near the very beginning. There was an old-fashioned term for it that they used to, and that's another thing.
Anticipatory set.
Education itself is guilty of always changing the name of things.
Well, maybe that's the same as presenting the stimulus. Would that be the same as?
Presenting a stimulus is just a way to pique their interest.
Well, that's similar to anticipatory. The
right,
word
but
anticipatory.
But the anticipatory set was a set, though, that was tied to prior knowledge, specifically. But, like, I may be introducing in science, I may be introducing chemical reaction. So I just walk up in front of the classroom and set up 2 jars of clear liquid and I pour powder in each one and one fizzes and the other one doesn't. And that's all I do. Well, I'm doing that because I want to stimulate them, get them like, why? You know, and that helps set up. And I might do that first. I might do that the very first thing and then go into the previous knowledge. Now, you guys know what you learned yesterday about mm-hmm. chemical reactions.
So these events don't necessarily have to come one after the other.
No, I mean, obviously the attention getting one needs to come first. If you don't have their
attention.
But like between stimulating and previous knowledge, sometimes it's this all rolled into one. It can be the same thing.
Stimulating recall of prior learning, mm-hmm. presenting the stimulus, I can see where those are very closely related. Now, event 5 is providing learning guidance.
Now, providing learning guidance is a big thing. Learning guidance is the secret there. It's not the old-fashioned lecture. The old-fashioned lecture really needs to be put to rest and taken out. Not only because it was a bad idea, and it probably was a bad idea even back in history. But back in history, you had mom and dad at home that were going to do some serious whooping on you. And I don't know if it was whooping per se, but serious punishment if you didn't bring home a good report card. So therefore, you had your stimulation right there to do good. But now we're in a generation where nobody touches anybody negatively. And the kids are raised on video games and TV and all kinds of stimulus.
And it's actually changed the way our brains work.
Right. So having them sit in squares in a classroom and be lectured to, parents, if you see that, your kids are in the wrong place. And teachers, if you're doing that, you need to seriously consider changing that and doing some research on how to use some...
Even if you just take one strategy and really work that strategy until you feel comfortable with it, and then maybe the next month try some other strategy.
Right. And another thing that needs to be relegated to testing and to assessing, I should say, and that's worksheets. Worksheets should be only assessing. You shouldn't teach off a worksheet.
Yes.
It doesn't work that well, and it's not that good anymore. You need to have something that's really engaging all the students. I mean, they're all engaged and anxious to know more.
Okay, event Number six, eliciting performance.
Eliciting performance, again, is tied into what we just said, which is getting the kids engaged. To elicit yes. performance means that you need to know your students and know what you're going to be able to do to get them to be involved, to produce. Okay, so if I have students that are sitting and I say to them, all right, boys and girls, take out your science books and turn to page 39. Okay, Johnny, you read the first paragraph. And Sue, you'll take the second. And I mean, I've already lost 90% of them. And if you have a poor reader and that poor reader starts stumbling over the words, the rest of the kids are beginning to get nervous for them and just, you know. And the whole thing is really counterproductive to education. It's making the kids hate science, not love science. So that's not getting performance. So to get performance out of these kids, I need to teach gently, entertain largely. Teach gently, entertain largely.
I love it.
True education is entertaining, and it's actually entertaining at a deeper level than entertainment is. It's fascinating. So you can do things, and we could go into a whole show on that, but protocols are a really important thing to elicit performance. Using different types of protocols, different types of things that require the students to get up and move about the classroom. Games can be involved in it. Projects, groups, working in groups. Self-directed, student-centered type of things to get the performance out of them.
Well, we're going to take a break right here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about how to provide feedback. We'll be right back.
Hoffy, when are we going to get through this jungle?
Don't. No.
Hoffy, what was that?
I don't know, but I will check through the binoculars. Oh, my joy, it is a hippopotamus.
Oh, Hoppy, let me see.
Herbie the Hippo, and I Can Read Animal Story. Check us out at myhomeschoolcompanion.com. That's all one word, myhomeschoolcompanion.com.
Welcome back to Education Currents. We're glad you're with us. We're talking about the nine events in a class or
yes.
in nine
events of instruction.
Of instruction, yeah. That should happen within a class period.
Yes, and we had gone through event one, which was gaining attention. Event two, which was informing the learner of the objective. And then event three and four kind of were tied together, stimulating recall of prior learning and also presenting a stimulus. And then event five, providing learning guidance. Event six, eliciting performance. Event seven, providing feedback. How should a teacher provide really meaningful feedback to these students?
It goes again, if you're lecturing, you can't. But if you get the concepts out there, they have the objectives, they're working in groups, or in some cases individually even, but they're working in groups, and you as the teacher are wandering the classroom, and you're stopping by the groups, and you bend down and you're asking them questions about their project. One of the examples, when I used to teach spelling, instead of, okay, here are your words, go home and memorize these, and each one that you miss on the test tomorrow, I'm going to make you write five times each. Instead of doing that, we'd start off giving them all their spelling words, and they were to cut them into strips. Then they were to individually categorize them in any way that they wanted to. You had to categorize them. So as they were doing that, I'd walk around the classroom, and I'd bend down next to Joe and say, well, why did you put these this way? And then he'd say, I did it. Wow, Joe, that's really, I wouldn't have thought of that myself. That's a really great idea. That's fantastic. And then as I listen to Joe, he's giving me feedback. Now, another way then, and you should do this constantly, you have a journal with you and you conference with each child. You take a few minutes. One of the greatest times to do this, you should have a big, if you're in elementary school, you should have a big reading period where they have independent reading. And during that independent reading, you can call specific students up or go over to them and sit down and do a little mini conference with them. You can conference about what they're reading, and you can conference about some troubles you think they may be having. And you take notes on each one of these conferences. And you just continue doing that all the time throughout the school year until you have all these notes and you've communicated with each child. So those are two ways. There are still a lot more that you can do in giving immediate feedback. But the important thing is that you are making contact with each one of your students on a one-to-one basis at least once a week, if not more.
And that can be an astronomical task if you have large classes.
Well, yeah, if you have large classes, sometimes you have to have the students actually help each other give feedback. Mm-hmm. For instance, take the spelling example. After everybody had, let's say I had them take paste and paste their spelling words as they categorize them. Then I could have them go into groups using fairness sticks or some predetermined method. And then that group, each child would have to describe to the group why they categorized theirs that way and then listen to the feedback from the group. So then you get this feedback going back and forth on how they categorized their words, and each one would have to give a presentation of how they did it.
Now, from event number 7, which was providing feedback, we go to event 8, assessing performance. Now, is this where the teacher is the only one at this point now that is assessing the performance of that student?
Well, students can assess other students' performance, just like in the example I gave you. One of the things, for instance, in assessing performance is if you read a story, and then you want you're trying to teach the concept of main character and what makes it the main character. So everybody sits down and in a group, you split your students up into groups after they've read the story, and they all have to decide who the main character is and who the foil is, let's say. And then they have to say why. So each group sits down, makes their arguments, they create a chart. And they create a T-chart. This is our main character, and here's why, and here's how he fits the main, and this is the foil, and here's why. And then after that's done, each group then tapes their sheet, their chart, to the wall, and then the groups then rotate and spend a few minutes at each chart, and they're given crayons where they write their critiques on each chart as they go by. They agree or I disagree, here's why. You can have it for the Shire ones, they put a check for agree. And so they each give this feedback as they go around. And then in the end, you as the teacher, they've done a lot of the work. Then you as the teacher can look over that and give a final discussion with the whole class all together in a group. And therefore, a lot of your work was done student to student, but then you were able to finally pull out the final thing that you wanted them to know and see how well their conclusions were. But assessment also a lot is just, I mean, assessment, a good teacher knows with about 80 to 90% already before any assessment's given the result. I mean, they know it.
Yes, yes.
Because they've been assessing constantly, assessing constantly.
So, event number 9, and this is the end of the 9 events of instruction, says enhancing retention and transfer, which really is a type of mastery. You know, you've done mastery learning.
This part has to be systematic. It's not something that's individual to each class. It has to be part of the master plan that the teacher had. If the teacher had a master plan for their class that makes what they've learned, not just in that class, but in all the classes within this subject area, relevant to the child's life, they're going to retain, and they're going to use it, and they're going to think about it. If he's made it really, or she's made it really interesting, is another component. But if it's not relevant, if we learn things, no matter how much we were charmed by them, but they're not relevant to our lives, we forget them. I can't tell you how many parents of fifth graders come in and say, "Man, I need you to refresh me on how to do long division because I want to help my student, and it's been so long since I've done it that I can't remember." Well, that's because as an adult, they weren't using long division. They were using calculators, or whatever. They didn't actually do the long division and write it out anymore. So you either use it or lose it. So that's one of the things. You got to make sure that what you're teaching is relevant. I think there's so many teachers that let the book plan for them. The textbook does my planning. They have no idea really what they want their students to learn. They just say, well, I want them to get through the textbook, and I've sat down, and I want them to get through this much by Thanksgiving, and this much by Christmas, and then this much by spring break, and then we'll finish it off, and we'll have the whole book done, and I'll feel good about myself because we covered every page in the textbook. But they never thought through what they want their students to learn.
It was such an epiphany for me because I taught many years with whatever the prescribed curriculum was. I taught it to the best of my ability. And once I got hooked on to the idea of, hey, I can have a learning objective, and that objective now really is my map. I can add or subtract to it. I can look through a lot of these curriculums, or the books that support the curriculum are great resources. They have what the lesson plan or how you could adapt it to ESL. They have, but for the basic I'm talking about math in particular. They have it for the basic math student. They have it for the average math student. They have it for the advanced math student. And then they have additional differentiated instructional techniques and just a wealth of information.
And resources.
And if I didn't look at the learning objective, I could easily get into kind of a scope creep and go, oh, that looks like a fun thing to do. Oh, that looks like a fun thing to do.
And that's a lot of what goes on. And in education is okay, well, we'll sit down and what are we going to do? We're supposed to be teaching fractions. What are some good fraction games? And then I used to have team meetings and I had one. I had this, but oh, that looks like a good idea. So we'll all do the fraction game. But nobody really, especially in math, math is a weakness for even a lot of teachers. Nobody had a real clear objective, what I want my students to learn. For instance, and we've lost it. We've lost it nationwide even. What is the purpose of algebra and geometry? The original purposes of algebra and geometry were to teach logical thinking. They weren't supposed to be about math applied to the real world or applied mathematics. They weren't applied mathematics per se. Now, you can use some of the concepts in computer programming and in engineering, but you don't use a lot of geometry and algebra as it's taught in the classroom in high school. You don't use that a lot of, like, a geometric proof. No engineer is doing geometric proofs, you know. So, but the reason you did the geometric proofs, and algebra originally was the same way. You had to do a T proof with algebra so that each step you took over on the other side of the T, you had to list the mathematical property that allowed you to do that.
And I'm making my students do that.
So you, smarter. The research shows that you should never give a student
Of our conversations, right, doing these shows, you taught me that.
Students should never be given more than 15 problems. If a student can't master the material in 15 problems for homework, then they're in over their heads.
Well, I have this year, I'm trying an experiment, but it's a total of 15 problems a day. Five of them are a recap. In other words, a spiral kind of review so that they're always practicing past. Five of them we work in class. I mean, we have short classes this year. And then five of them they do on their own. And it's working. So far, I'm very excited about the progress they're making.
Now, if we were going to do event 9 with a class like that, we want to encourage the students to use this idea in their decisions in other areas in life. My older student, maybe I'm a college professor, and this person wants to get married. We'll create this T-chart. I know that it's all romantic and fluffy and that kind of stuff, but that romantic and fluffy stuff leads us to a 50% divorce rate.
That's right.
And those that stay married, who knows how many are happy.
Yeah.
But if you looked at it dispassionately for a while and you said, okay, if I make this move, what's my reason?
Mm-hmm.
And then if I make this move, what's my reason? So if we could translate that logical thinking into our life decisions, then we would have event 9 taking place, and people would begin to be able to extend their knowledge that they learned in math. And in math, I actually learned about life, because it wasn't just about numbers, but it was about learning to think logically and organized, an organized thought process.
What a great way to conclude our show on the 9 events of instruction. Please listen to us each week. And go to our website, educationcurrents.com. That's educationcurrents.com. And Paul and I would like to wish you a good day.
You've been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media. We're now on Facebook, and we'd love to have you join our discussion. Once you're in Facebook, just type in the name Education Currents. We'll also like to thank our production staff, the various networks that make this broadcast possible. For more information on education topics, go to educationcurrents.com. That's educationcurrents.com.